This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to Be Sotted, the Pride of West London podcast, brought to you in association with Anything Is Possible. We're delighted to have this media agency on board with us, looking for a sponsor, a like-minded sponsor, for a little while now. And these guys seem to be right up our strata, as they say. So, yeah, welcome to Anything Is Possible. More information about them as the weeks and months go by. So, with me today is Matt the Allard. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, I'm very, very well. I'm very good, joining you in the virtual pub, as we say. Very cosy, me and you together today.
I'm actually shivering today. I'm actually finding it really cold, but it's not so cosy in this virtual joint. I'd rather be by a fire in a real pub, but I think we've got a lot of pub action coming in the next few weeks, so I think we'll be seeing a lot more of each other physically.
Yeah, which would be good. I mean, does your heating work? Because my heating doesn't work at the moment, so we could be rudely interrupted by the boiler man at some point.
The boiler man is a euphemism. Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully the boiler man will leave us well alone.
Or the boiler woman.
Or the woman, yes, the boiler person. Let's call it that way. But before we start, mate, I mean, you know, there's a real big question that I need to ask you before we move on to, you know, Brentford matters. Have you been to Peppa Pig World?
No, I haven't. No, should I have been there? I mean, it sounds like maybe I should have, because isn't it a shining example of all the best things in Britain or something?
Yeah, 100% is that. But you know, we used to talk about, you know, things to do on away games. I've noticed that Peppa Pig World is at Portons Park. It's very close to Southampton, and we've got Southampton away in a couple of weeks. So, you know, are you up for it, mate?
Yeah, definitely. I can only imagine what the TripAdvisor views. I actually haven't got around to looking at them, but I would imagine they're quite good at the moment.
Oh, there's definitely more of this. We might have a little besotted jaunt to Peppa Pig World before. The photo opportunities are really good. So,
do they sell alcohol?
unlikely. Well, I don't know. It's a good chance. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. We got a lot to talk about tonight, actually. We're going to go back and speak about the Newcastle game. 3-3 draw from up on the northeast. We came back with a point under our arm. It's something we hadn't done for four games. It was important to stop that rot. We did it just about. We held on by the skin of our teeth. It was a bit of a nervy ending to what was an absolute roller coaster of a match. Roller coaster in many ways, because when you're at the very, very top of a roller coaster, it was a very similar view from being at the top of the stand at St James's Park. So we'll talk about that. Obviously, we spoke about the game in bite-sized chunks with Ali Mullally and Billy on Monday night for the post-match debrief, the post-match podcast. Download that, because we had a bit of a laugh on that podcast as well. We're going to obviously speak about Everton. Everton are the next opposition for Brentford, and they come to Griffin Park, New Griffin Park, on Sunday. Bit of an odd one. I'm hoping the atmosphere will be what we need it to be, because we obviously need to get more points on the table. So that's to come a little bit later. We've got an Everton fan who's going to come on and tell us everything that's happening at Goodison. Bit of a spluttery start by them. We're hoping their splutters continue. And we're also joined by JB, Jonathan Birchall, who gives his facts and his funk a very popular slot. And we'll also, spreadsheet winker, he's gonna sprinkle his statistics all over the pod. So lots to talk about, and lots to look forward to, of what is going to be an incredible December. You know, we've got league points and we've got a cup quarter final with Chelsea to look forward to. So all good in the hood after getting a point back on the table up at St James's. So obviously, Matt, let's come to you first, because you know you weren't involved in the pod on Monday night, and during that we obviously talk about our main takeaways. So first question to you, what was your main takeaway from the Newcastle draw?
I think my main takeaway was that I really couldn't believe how bad we were defensively. I know there's two views of it. We were good at attacking, but defensively I was so worried about the game, and if we don't sort that out quickly, this season is we're going to get dragged right into where we don't want to be. So yeah, that was my main takeaway. We need to sort something out at the back. We need to find a shape that works. We need to find a group of players that can play together at the back.
I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it, with the injury crisis that we've got. It's hard to be hypercritical of the defence and or the goalie. However, there's still individual mistakes creeping in. I mean, obviously there's a quality issue where you strip away an Ayer, and there's not another Ayer to stroll straight back into that. And obviously with Zanka injured as well, we are threadbare, reasonably threadbare at the back. We were a little bit critical of the goalkeeper Fernandez. Do you think that's justified, or do you think it's kind of like he's paying the price for having sort of a makeshift defence in front of him?
I understand where you guys were coming from, you guys and girls. I thought that has he made a save where you go, wow, he hasn't. He's had opportunities to do it because he's letting, you know, plenty of goals. But I also think there's another side to it, and I think we haven't given him a sort of a solid base to start with. He's been thrown into flux, and that flux comes from obviously from Raya being replaced by him, but also from the flux around the back three. I mean, I to be honest, when I watched the game on Saturday, I spent half of it trying to work out, were we playing a back four or back three? I couldn't work out whether Roeslev was playing, you know, on the right of a back three, or had we reverted to a back four and pushed Canos up. And if I'm sort of struggling with that a bit, I'm sure, you know, as a goalkeeper coming into a side, that's going to make it more difficult, because it means that, you know, say Pontus or whatever, who might be the person you'd be expecting to give the keeper some support, he's also got to worry about Roeslev and him positionally. So I think it's a bit of both. I just would, and I really liked Ali's point, is that you kind of feel if he can just make a couple of saves and get his confidence up, he could be on his way. Worryingly, he's not the biggest, but then we thought that about Raya as well. Although he took a couple of crosses against Newcastle, he doesn't necessarily come for crosses like you would want your keeper to. It doesn't feel like he's bossing that 6-yard box at the moment, and that's kind of what you need from a keeper. When you have young keepers, that doesn't always come straight away. He's learning on the job, and learning on the job's hard when you get thrown in. You know, ideally, he would have played the cup games this year. And, you know, he would have just spent his time learning, getting to know the team, getting to know the squad, playing an important part in, you know, practice sessions and stuff like that. But we've had to throw him in. And I guess, you know, could it have gone better? It would have been nice. Could it have gone worse? Yes, because I don't honestly think, apart from maybe a bit of a fluff in the Burnley game, that you could really sort of say, oh, my God, that's terrible keeper fluff. There was nothing like the Newcastle keeper. And what you really want is for him to make a really good save before he makes a shit really bad fluff.
Yeah, and no, I agree. I mean, you know, I'm with you and I'm with Ali. Hopefully he's one big game or one big save away from it turning round and sort of like everyone having a lot more confidence, including himself. You know, it's a difficult situation for sure. You touched upon Mads Roslev there. I mean, I've watched the game back. I haven't watched all of the game back. I've watched the highlights back, the extended highlights. I thought he had a decent time against Saint-Maximin for a chunk of that game. First half, particularly. And you're right when you said you were a bit confused about whether we were playing, you know, what kind of system we were playing at the back, because when he was in wider positions and he was kind of tackling Saint-Maximin, he seems to be quiet. He seems to have quite some joy there. How do you rate Roslev's performance?
I thought he did okay to start with, and I didn't worry too much. But I still didn't think he was sure of where he was positionally. I've watched the game once. I haven't had the opportunity to watch it back. But when you kind of like look at the highlights, I'm still not really sure where he is positionally because he's up the pitch, he's back, he's attacking probably more than you'd want him to attack. I think that last 15, 20 minutes where Saint-Maximin really came into his own, his legs tired, as Kanos couldn't get back to support Roslev, I think that's when he looked a little bit more sort of, under pressure. I think probably when he had the support from Kanos, we kind of dealt okay. But the last 15, 20 minutes when we got stretched, and obviously we were trying to win the game as we do, I think he sort of struggled a bit then.
It's interesting to see. I mean, obviously we've got an extra day prep for the Everton game, the coaches have got a week to work on their defence and setting us up for the Toffees visit. Would you? I mean, I know he hasn't got a huge amount of options, but how would you set up? Would you change anything based on that Newcastle game, or do you just kind of think we have to just set up in a similar way and just hopefully, you know, we get a little bit more lucky with those deflections and we make the tackles rather than miss them?
I'd be building from the back, to be honest, because I think it's time to get back to not letting goals in. I would seriously look at putting Norgaard into the back three. And then hope that Jan Elk can do Norgaard's role in midfield, because we played that way a little bit last season once we switched to the back three and before Norgaard got injured. So I don't really see any. It does weaken the midfield a bit, and you're asking a lot of Onyeka, and then you've got to find a third player. But now that Baptiste looks fit, if he can go, 60, 70 minutes, then you can throw him in. So you go with a midfield of, say, Jan Elk, Baptiste and Onyeka. Albeit that two of them didn't play 90 minutes on, or even close to 90 minutes on Saturday, is that the way forward? I think really we need to get back to basics. We need to stop letting goals in, and I kind of thought that's what we did last season when Norgaard went into the back three. We just looked strong and decent again, and maybe that's an option. But we're flipping it around, aren't we? One week it's Roslev playing on the right, and you move Pontus into the middle. Then or the week before that, it's Good playing in the middle and you've got Pontus on the right. You know, we are sort of, it would appear that we're not solving the problem we have at the moment. And maybe there is an obvious solution, even if it weakens us elsewhere.
We can do that. We can sort the defence out, or we could just score five every game and it'll be fine. We'll just outscore them.
It would be thoroughly entertaining to score five every game, and I would love that. But you know what this is about. It's about making sure we get some points in the bag before we get on another run of sticky games, and there's a run coming, you know.
Ain't there just, mate? So that was your main takeaway, was the fact that we stopped the rot. We got a point, we moved forward. But let's go back to the pubs after the game up at St James's and listen to the Brentford fans. And from my point of view, I thought the Newcastle fans post-match were the soundest bunch I've heard on a post-match for quite some time. I thought they really got it. Anyway, let's go back to the pubs after the game and listen to what the Brentford fans and the Newcastle fans thought of the match on Saturday.
I think we played well going forward. We were stretched at the back quite a lot in the first half and in the second, but Newcastle, Saint-Maximin's really scary going forward. They defended quite well in the end, I thought.
Let's take it back, but going forward, I think we looked more ruthless, and there's more passing and move up front, so which is good.
Basically, the story of today was we were great going forward and a bit rubbish at the back, but I'm so happy with the point. Like, if we'd lost another one, I would have been absolutely gutted. It's been a great day today, bits of great pubs. But yeah, we played decent. Yeah, like, but the second goal we played, that was a great move. Really, really great move, second goal. Like, it's frustrating. That first goal, Newcastle scored, like, again, set plays, conceded again. We look weak. I think we can work on that. We had some beautiful attacking play. Like, I'm so pleased for Tony as well, scoring. against, you know, the club and let him go. Our third was a little bit lucky maybe, but I think we deserved it. I think it was a draw game. Like, we both deserved a draw. I'm happy with a draw. Like, to lose, I would have been absolutely gutted.
Football's a winner, but I'd rather we were the winner, to be honest. But on a taking a point before the game, so we were a little bit too open, a bit gutted. I think we were letting them have too much room to get their shots in and could have done better for the last goal. I think Canos didn't track back as well as he could have done, but hey, we've got a point and we haven't had a point for a long while, have we?
It was a good game. I think we turned the corner, mate. I think we turned the corner.
Performance was back to a good level. Defences weren't so good, but you know, we've still got injuries to come back, so injured players to come back. So I've got to be happy with that. If you would have asked me before the game, point would be great. We got the point. You know, we've not lost. That's the main thing. And the performance was good.
When you took the lead a couple of times, I thought it's only going to go one way, but we just managed to come back into it. As we said before the game, two probably even sides in terms of how open the game was, and it was going to take a couple of errors to get a winner, but I'm happy that it's a draw. I can come back here and have a pint with yourselves and it's all equal. I can't see Brentford struggling towards the end of the season. You might have stopped your unwinning run, but I can't see you being towards the end of the table, bottom end of the table by the end of the season. There'll be plenty more wins from the Bees this season.
We thought we were the better team, but that we probably deserved to lose the game. Well, you had the better chances, let's be honest. I mean, it could have been probably 5-3 to you lot. That one that was ruled out for offside, I guess it was probably offside, but there were two or three other ones where, you know, a little foot either side and that one was in. So yeah, we looked a lot better than we have been, but the defence was
I don't feel like I've watched us play for years. I've watched the opposition come and play against us, but I haven't watched us. I haven't watched Newcastle play. I've watched other teams play against us because we just stood there while everybody passed it around us, and today we actually were a bit more positive.
Well, I did enjoy it, but it sort of it takes me back to when we drew 6-6 at Dagenham and everyone would go, that was a brilliant game. And it's like, it was a good game in terms of it was exciting, but it wasn't a good game in terms of quality. There were times where it looked like we might take control of the game, 3-2 up, and we just let it go. And so it's a point on the road, and I'm very respectful of that, but you just feel we could have done a little bit better today.
So there you have it. That was the boys and the girls back in the boozers after the game up in Newcastle. We had some fun up there. We'll move on from the Newcastle game in a sec, but something that's kind of like, well, I thought was reassuring, because as I said just before we went into that sort of the package, was the fact that Newcastle, I thought, were sound. The fans, they know their stuff. They're also kind of used to relegation fights, and they know, I think, what's the standard to escape, what you need to do to escape, and how bad you've got to be to get relegated. None of them thought we all were bad enough to get relegated, and they were kind of like as kind of buoyed by the thought of the way we approach the games, the way we attack, the way we're kind of. But we go on the front foot, and you know, we are weak at the back at the moment, but we are confident in our abilities going forward. Are you still vibing off that, or are you kind of really concerned about what December might chuck at us?
I tell you where I am, right? Defensively, at the moment, we're bad enough to get relegated. I mean, we are. Yeah, you can watch it. You can see that we can't defend. You know, we're struggling to defend corners. We're struggling to stop runners coming at us. So we are bad enough defensively, but we're still scoring goals. And I always worry. I always really, really, really worry when we stop scoring goals. That's when I see massive, massive alarm bells. So let's just get the defence sorted out, which is why I always think, you know, you need to just go back to basics at some point and say, right, let's just keep a clean sheet, and then everything else will follow. And that's a common, everyone says it in football. But it makes sense, doesn't it? If we can just get, we haven't had a clean sheet, I don't know for how long now. It seems a bit of time. So we just need to do the basics. In terms of getting relegated, the only thing that worries me really is that most weeks I can pick three teams that are worse than us. At the moment, I think it's really difficult. I think the Premier League's in a bit of flux with new managers coming in at Newcastle, at Watford, and at Norwich. And I think it's going to take a few. Like it felt, it had settled down 2 or 3 weeks ago, and everything was rosy. And now it's going to take a few more weeks, or maybe a month, for it all to settle down again, and you to see, you know, exactly where you are. So I think it's at the moment, it's, you know, making predictions is probably a bit of a mug's game, because we don't really know what those teams are going to achieve. Villa have got a new manager as well, of course.
I get another chance to look at Newcastle for my sins on Saturday. I've got an Arsenal book launch, and it's quite a biggie, and they've given us like a box, and I've got to watch Newcastle all over again during the game, I'll know a little bit more about that.
The beauty of course of Sunday kickoffs, though.
Yeah, it allows me not to miss it, I guess. I wouldn't have missed the mighty, mighty bees. I'll tell you who else knows what went down in that Newcastle game, as well as the away fans and the Brentford fans after the game. It's Will, the spreadsheet winker. Spreadsheet winker. Let's go over to Will and let's find out how he crunched the numbers.
Spreadsheet winker, he's a winker, and it does seem good like it pretty well should be. Spreadsheet winker, he's a winker, and he's always running his blood.
So, what do we need to know about the Newcastle game then? We very much lost this one in terms of chances created. We ended up on 1.19 XG compared to Newcastle's 2.63. If we'd have won this, it would have been the biggest smash and grab all season. Defensively, we looked poor and unable to stop shots in and around our box. Newcastle ended up with 21 attempts, with 8 of those on target. 2 of their goals were high XG chances in the area. Lascelles' opening header was 0.38 XG, probably exclusively because he was badly marked and not pressured at all. There's absolutely no way that a header like that should be 0.38 XG, and it tells us just how poor our defending was that we allowed it to become such a large chance. St Maximin's equaliser was 0.3 XG as well. We gave him 7 shots all to himself, albeit only 2 were on target, which with an attacker as dynamic as he is, shouldn't really happen. We were outpressed by an Eddie Howe coach Newcastle, who came flying out of the traps. That's not to say we didn't press high as well, allowing 9.6 passes in front of our defence before tackling, compared to Newcastle's 7.85. It's only the second time we've been outpressed this season. Attacking-wise, we did all right, but the lion's share of our 1.19 XG did come from Rico Henry's goal, a 35% chance because he was completely unmarked. The Lascelles' own goal doesn't count towards our chance total, but it would have been tiny anyway from so far out, like Ivan Toney's goal. Darlow was given a 50% chance of saving this shot from Wyscout, which suggests it was much easier to save than to score, since the shot was just a 4% chance. For my money, we were lucky even to draw this one.
I don't know about you, Matt, but I fancy a bit of facts, a few facts and a bit of funk now. But before we go over to Jonathan Birchall, got another quick question for you. Would you prefer Percy Pigs or Pepper Pig?
Oh, I like it. Percy Pigs. Percy Pigs are the sweet things, right?
Yeah, the M&S Percy Pigs.
Oh, I'm a big fan of those. Big fan of those.
So if you were Percy stranded Pigs. on a desert island and you had to be...
Can you strand me with some Percy Pigs?
I can arrange that. I'll arrange that, mate. No worries.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Saturday was our second 3-3 league draw of the season. The last time we had two in a season was under Andy Scott in 2009-10. Then it was against MK Dons at home and Colchester away. It's only the seventh time we've had league draws of 3-3 or greater twice in a season. Rico Henry has now scored in back-to-back league games. In the last 50 years, if you exclude fullbacks or wingbacks who also took penalties, the only other time we've had two from two in open play was from Iger Anderson in March 1996, in the 1-0 wins away at Hull and at home to Wrexham. The draw saw us end a run of 4 straight league defeats. Had we lost, we'd have equaled the 5 at the end of 2007, which were also Terry Butcher's final 5 games in charge. The last of which was a 1-0 defeat to Grimsby at Griffin Park, watched by a crowd of 3,999 as we sunk to 6th from bottom of the 4th tier. Whereas on Saturday, we were watched by 3,000 Bees fans in a crowd of 52,131, the largest league crowd to watch us for 73 years and the 8th highest in our history.
There you go. Jonathan Birchall never fails to excite, never fails to entertain. What facts they were, and the funk. I'm not a funk lover. I've fessed up to that in the past, but that the intro, the James Brown intro music, has grown on me as the months and the years and the decades have gone past, and I reckon I'm going to dig out the full version, and I'm going to have a little boogie around my lounge later on.
Do you feel like have you got a bit of funk about you now? Do you think?
Yeah, not really. No, there's not a lot.
Not enough drum machines.
No, still not enough drum machines, mate. I do move. There's a bit of movement now. I mean, I don't just stand there looking like, you know, look like some bloke out of Sparks, but my legs don't move to it. So
it's not traditional funk that you move to, is it?
No, I'm not funking. I'm not on a funking tip. No, but there you go. Jonathan loves it. And that's all that matters, really. Before we do move on, we had the B team. Let's just talk about the B team. They had a humongous win last night in the Middlesex Senior Cup. They beat a team called Broadfields United, who are apparently near Harrow. Their brand on their website says Fighting Cocks is their kind of Broadfields United Fighting Cocks. That's what I call them. Hopefully, there's not a lot of cockfighting that goes on near Harrow. I don't think that's permitted anymore. But the important thing is we move on. It's two cup quarterfinals. We've got the Allard, we've got the Caribou Cup to look forward to, and we've got the Middlesex FA Senior Cup. Which one are you buzzing off most?
Well, is the FA Senior Cup, is that already confirmed to be against Hamwell? Did I read last night? I'm probably putting you in that here because you probably haven't got a clue.
I haven't got a scoop to do, mate.
No, but it feels like we always play against Hamwell or at Hamwell at some point during the cup. So maybe it is at Hamwell. Yes, and I mean I think that game with last night was played at Northwood. Which I guess is near Harrow. So obviously, you know, Broadfields don't, I assume, have their own ground if it was played at Northwood. Or maybe it had to be moved. You know, in the tradition of cup games, it had to be moved to bigger grounds.
Maybe they because had cockfighting was on already. they had something in the fixture list, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. It could have been that instead. But 11-0 for the B team. I mean, it's very difficult to judge those sort of games, isn't it? You know, 11 or 6, does it make a lot of difference?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did read the report. I didn't watch the game, but the Broadfields Twitter feed just said a night to forget. So I think we'll leave it there, and I'm sure our paths will cross again in the Middlesex FA Senior Cup. Hopefully there was some good came out of that for both teams, because you know, it's important that our B team use that to get near some sort of A team readiness. But I did
actually go and see the B team a few weeks ago. I saw them play Woking.
All right.
Which was, yeah, I mean, they're still, you know, Woking are obviously a conference side, and they played quite a few of their first team. And the B team did lose. They looked really good for 20, 25 minutes. We're playing great football, but I still sort of, they couldn't quite step up, I suppose, to the to Woking sort of, I guess it's just, you know, some experienced older players playing. But it's still really good experience, isn't it? Just to keep playing these games against, you know, some stronger non-league teams. Obviously, they may not have learned a whole lot last night, but I think it's really worthwhile playing in these cup matches and against these sorts of teams, because really what you're trying to get is some very, very young players to transition into adult football and probably being bashed about by some non-league, by some old non-league heads isn't a bad thing.
let's move on to the Everton match. It shows you how far, really, Brentford have come, I think, that it was 2010, we had that Caribou, well, it wasn't a Caribou Cup, it was called the League Cup, whatever cup it was in 2010. We had that famous penalty shootout win over Everton at Griffin Park. Won 4-3 on penalties. 8,900 were there that night, on a night we probably won't forget. It was a really, really star-studded. Well, looking back at the Everton team, it was a really strong team. David Moyes was the Toffees manager at the time. Apparently, there's no XG stats from 2010. But looking back at the Everton team, they had Leighton Baines, Phil Jagielka, Phil Neville, Seamus Coleman, who's still there. He'll be probably going to play on Sunday. Mario Fellaini, Yakuba, Mikel Arteta, Jermaine Beckford, Ross Barkley. I mean, that was a decent team. Ross Barkley didn't come on, but you know he was involved. They really fluffed it that night, and Brentford, after a 1-1 draw, they went ahead quite early. I think Coleman scored his first goal for Everton that night, and Gary Alexander equalised for Brentford. But everyone remembers Richard Lee and the saves that he made in the penalties. That was kind of Tricky Dicky's kind of finest hour almost, wasn't it? What do you remember of that night, Matt?
I remember that. I remember I took a friend of mine, an Australian friend who at the time was just a work colleague and has become a strong friend since. And I just remember him being absolutely blown away by it. And sometimes you sort of, when you know, sometimes you can underestimate how awesome something is or what an amazing experience it is because it's your club. But he still talks about that now, that night, as being his sort of, you know, his real introduction to British football. And he follows the Bees from this day. I remember him sending photographs of him and his son with their Brentford scarves in front of the Sydney Harbour Bridge just before one of the playoff games and stuff like that. So I remember that too. You know, it was just one of them amazing nights. It was, at the time, those nights didn't come around very often, did they? I mean, I think
once every other season, if you're lucky.
Well, maybe the game might have come around once every other season, but to win it didn't come around very often. Yeah. And when you think, you know, how spoilt we've been in the last, it's worth remembering how spoilt we've been in the last 4 or 5 years. When you think, you know, back to how many of those sort of games you can remember from the previous 25, 30 years, at least ones that we've won. I mean, we've lost a fair few, but ones that we've won, and that it just was brilliant, wasn't it? And Richard Lee, I mean, I think he'd already made some penalty saves in one of the other games. But he had a really sticky start to his career. He'd lost his place in the first team. He'd come in really as the, you know, as hoped to be the first team option. Lost his place in the team, and then that was, you know, it was around then that he sort of really started to make a name for himself. And like you say, that we'll always remember him for that. It was his finest moment, I suppose, in a Brentford shirt and Brentford goalkeeper shirt. Maybe his finest moment.
He proved that night that anything is possible. I squeezed another plug in there for our new sponsors. But yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, but you know, going back to, as you said, look, we've come a long way. We've come a ridiculously long way. And you know, if put it this way, you know, if someone had said to you straight after that penalty shootout that, you know, in 12 years' time we'd be playing them in the Premier League in a new stadium, a lot of people would have thought you were slightly potty or kind of like you had proper rose tinted specs on. It's a reality now.
Yeah, I mean, how far we were with the stadium at that point, I can't remember, but it was probably only on the horizon, and it was just, it's just, yeah, yeah. I sort of pinched myself. I'm just doing it now because if you go back then and you'd have said that we'd be playing Everton in the league, I'd have said, well, they never get relegated. So I don't know how that's going to happen.
Yeah. So Everton 2021-22, the season, they're not where their fans would hope they would be. It's been a, you know, they've got Rafa Benitez as manager. He wasn't, whether he still is, we'll find out from the Toffees fan in a minute, but he's, he's kind of divided that part of Liverpool, because he had obviously a big, big part in Liverpool Football Club's recent history, and obviously Newcastle as well. But he's at Goodison now. On the flip side, we can go into that game knowing that they have weaknesses, because, you know, obviously our video analysts and the coaching staff and the players would have sat down and they'll be forensically going through how they're gonna win the game on Sunday. Are you slightly infused? Are you kind of reassured that this kind of fixtures next up, we don't go straight to the Tottenham game?
Yeah, I think it's like I don't know. There's two ways of looking at it, isn't there? Because if we don't get something out of this game, then the Tottenham game becomes sort of a real looming sort of problem, in that, you know, with Conte and maybe Tottenham start turning it on, who knows. So I feel like there's a fair bit of pressure on Sunday for us to get something out of it. If, you know, minimum a draw, I would say. I think, you know, Everton, Benitez, like you said, there's all that noise, the Liverpool noise, that makes it really difficult for somebody to, you know, to actually, an Everton supporter, I think, to actually give you sort of an objective view of him, because they probably spent a long period of their time not liking him, and then probably laughing at him when he was at Chelsea, and then, you know, at Newcastle. I mean, he did a pretty good job, I suppose, of turning, well, for keeping Newcastle in the Premier League and getting him there. So that noise means that you can't really get a sensible judgment on him at the moment. I'd have thought they'd have hit the ground running a bit more than they have. They've spent big on managers in the last few years, and maybe it's, you know, switching again between from manager to manager, you know, and then do you go back through the squad, change the squad up to try and suit them the way the manager wants to play? I don't know, but it just feels like they're treading water.
What would be the equivalent at Brentford? What would be a manager coming in that would divide us like the same way? Scott Parker or Ian Holloway? Or do you think of someone else?
Yeah, Scott Parker, maybe. Ian Holloway, you've put me on the spot. I'm just trying to think. I mean, anyone that's managed QPR, Fulham, I suppose. I mean, simple as that, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose we had that, didn't we? Where Mickey Adams came off from Fulham. Did we sort of have we kind of accepted him. He sort of, quite like Mickey Adams. He sort of brought,
he was a nice bloke, wasn't he?
And he brought that sort of union support with him as well, didn't he?
Yeah, you know,
the sponsorship. So, yeah, so maybe that's not the best. Maybe that's not the best sort of, and you know.
Yeah, I think also Fulham were in the bottom tier, and you know, we went right down there. There was no sort of grandiose big time Charlie nonsense going on at the time. They were, you know, they were local rivals, but they weren't arch enemies. I wouldn't have said at that time, but you know, I could be wrong. Anyway,
yeah.
So before we speak to the Everton fan, let's go back over to Will Allsop and get some more stats. He knows exactly how dangerous Everton can be, the players to look out for, and how they have performed so far this season, according to the old XG. Over to you, Will.
Spreadsheet winker.
So what do we need to know about Everton then? They had a great start to the season, winning 3 out of their first 4 games and out-creating their opponents in all of those matches. Since then, they've only created more than their opponents once in the subsequent 8 matches, winning only once. They've dropped off both in terms of chances created and in letting their opponents create chances, similar to the Bees in that defensive aspect. They only average 41% possession so far this year, and pass the ball on average 200 times less than their opponents in a game. They also like to sit off, allowing just less than double the number of passes in front of their defence before tackling than Brentford do. So our strikers should have plenty of time in front of goal to get their shots away. Andros Townsend is their joint top scorer, with him, Damari Gray and Dominic Calvert-Lewin all on 3 goals. The kicker is that Calvert-Lewin has only played 3 games, and has amassed one more XG in those 3 than either Townsend or Gray have in 12 matches each. So without their big danger man, they're really struggling in front of goal. This is an excellent opportunity for a clean sheet for the beleaguered Bees defence. Let's hope they rise to the challenge.
So we need to find out everything there is to know about Everton from an Everton fan. We head over to Connor Williams from the Toffee Blue, and he'll tell us what's going down at Goodison Park.
Hi, I'm Connor Williams. I am a presenter, contributor for the Toffee Blues YouTube channel, a Everton fan channel that does videos on opponent previews, post-match reviews, latest rumours in the papers, etc, etc. I support Everton because my dad did, and you support the club, you either support your local or the club your dad did. And also, I live on the Wirral, which is just the other side of the River Mersey. So Liverpool actually isn't that far from me. It's about 30 minutes, give or take. And Everton are probably my closest big team to me, other than obviously Liverpool. So, yeah, that's why I support Everton. This season, it's been a bit tough for us. It's been riddled with injuries. We had a really good start. Couple of wins boosted us up the table, and then we sort of fell apart, lost to QPR in the Carabao Cup, then we lost to Villa 3-0, and since then 1-0 to West Ham, we've lost 3-0 to City, which is Manchester City, that's most recent, and if it's City, you're doomed if you don't. If you sit back and let them pile on the pressure, they beat you. If you try and play them, they come out fresher as well. We also lost 5-2 to Watford though at home, and it's results like that that proper kick you. But we've been doing it mainly without Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Decore's out, Gray's out, Digne was out for a bit, Pickford I think was out for a bit, Mina's out. So quite a lot of our squad, our first team squad, and then the depth's just not very good, so we were always going to struggle in that aspect. And injuries was always going to be our downfall. It was our downfall last season, and this season, we, well, apart from Townsend and Gray and Solomon Rondon, they were our only new recruits. Gray and Townsend are good. Solomon Rondon's not a very good football player, unfortunately. No offence to the fella. Obviously, we've got a new manager. When we were first linked with him, he was linked and Gerrard was linked, and I remember doing a video for the Toffee Blues and thought, I think this is a bit of lies, you know, get some clicks, do something a bit controversial, he'll get clicks, that will, a sort of idea from the media. But no, it turns out it was real. I mean, it's a weird pill to swallow. I wasn't against it for his Liverpool links. I was more against it because I thought the game had passed him by. Whether that's true or not is yet to be the case. I feel a bit harsh judging him because he's, like I've just read out, half our squad's been injured this season. So, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on the man. He can only do so much with what he's been given. And I think that's the sort of way that most of the fans are looking at it. He's got a very hard job to do. We had financial fair play crippling us, so he's not had the money that others have spent, you know. Down the years, a couple of the other managers, Marco Silva had a lot of money, Carlo had a bit of money, Angelotti. And I think that's the other thing. We went from Angelotti to Benitez, and if you go from Angelotti to anyone, it was going to be a downgrade. He was a coup, he was a 10, we couldn't believe it. We'd have had to get another 10, and no other, you know, manager worth this, like in his calibre, was going to come back to us. The problem is. You know, I know fans. Some of our fans aren't happy about Benitez, but the more we keep swapping managers, I think there's an 18-month life cycle at the minute at Everton for managers. The more we see teams pass us by, you know, the Arsenals, Arteta's clicking with them now. Spurs have got Conte. I imagine they are only going to improve. United, if they get Pochettino, whoever linked with them, if they get that acquisition right, they will come miles ahead again. So everyone around us is improving. Villa, Gerrard is so far at time of recording has 100% win ratio. I think that's the most annoying bit, is that there's that much swapping and changing. There's that many times at Everton you hear, oh, that's not this manager's players, it's the previous. You could say that, and some of those players go back four managers ago. And that underlies the problem. And I think the frustration for many fans is you see other teams improving, and that's a real kick in the teeth. Brentford, though, I actually do really like. Not just because I'm on the podcast, I'm not just kissing up for the sake of it. I actually do like how they ran. I like how the owner has them ran. I know, obviously, I spoke to Billy on ours, and he was saying, you know, that the owner, Matthew Benham, hates the word Moneyball, but I like how it's stats-driven. And then, you know, with the eye as well, it's not all stats-driven. You've got to judge by the eye, because that's how football works. It's a bit of both, give or take. I like how they sign young... I like how their business model is. I like that they sign undervalued players, sell them on for a profit if they need to. My advice for them in the Premier League is just to enjoy it. It's a tough league. Obviously, the first game of the season against Arsenal, I actually watched that, and it was fantastic. The atmosphere was amazing. The new stadium, fans back, a win against a Premier League team like Arsenal. It was really great to see. So I'd just say enjoy it and don't be too reactionary. There's a lot of Premier League clubs, Everton included, that are too reactionary, and you've just got to stay in with what you know and what you trust. And that is what I, from an outsider's view in, is what Brentford do. They stick with what they trust. They have a process, keep the faith. So yeah, I mean, I've said why Everton, but I'll probably say who's my best. My favourite Everton player growing up was Tim Cahill. Thought he was fantastic. Thought he fought for the badge. Got so many headed goals for a man who wasn't very tall. Knew where to pop up. I'll never forget. I think it was against Manchester City, maybe. Or was it Chelsea? I can't remember. I know the bicycle kick against Chelsea, but it was one where Lescott had headed it and it looked like it was going in, but then the keeper went to get it and Cahill just pops up as this ball's already going in and just gets his head under the ball to levitate it that little bit further and in. And I thought, that's him all over. Intelligent, real fox-in-the-box mentality for a centre mid. I mean, he could have been a striker. Sometimes he played striker for us, but he could have been an out-and-out striker sometimes. His intelligence was clever. Best player in terms of actual, like, in terms of ability recently, Lukaku was phenomenal for us. What a joy to watch Romelu Lukaku play football. Powerful striker. Scored and sometimes made it look easy. He made football look so easy because he just had everything about him. The physicality, the pace. He was fantastic. But obviously those times have been and gone. Got to look to the future. We've got a new stadium. Obviously, I mentioned Brentford Stadium. And I think the atmosphere is kept really well in there. I hope we can do the same. Goodison Park is a renowned stadium, well-loved by a lot of people for its atmosphere. And a lot of the commentators you hear say that they miss old grounds like Goodison. They're going to miss it when it's gone and the fans are going to miss it. Bramley Moor looks great on the surface. The plans written up for it. It looks like a really good stadium. Obviously, Spurs have set the bar now with theirs. I mean, all I hope is that it keeps the atmosphere, because if you take that away from Everton, then, you know, that will be a sad day. Our fans and the passion they bring is something a little bit better. In terms of our style of play on the pitch, though, at this current stage, leading up to the game this Sunday, I don't think there's a style as such. I think Benitez has sort of got a really bad deck of cards stacked against him because of the injuries. I think we'll play pragmatically. I think we'll play a low line. I think we'll look to hit on the break, but I think more than anything we'll look to try and stop the rot, keep a clean sheet. I think it's going to be a tough game for us. I think Ivan Toney's going to be very good. I think he's going to be very good at drawing our defenders out, bullying them a little bit. I'm hoping Yerry Mina's back, because I think he's a worthy competitor for Ivan Toney. But at the current time of this, I think he's still injured, so it'll probably be Ben Godfrey, who's no slouch, and Michael Keane, who I'm a little bit worried about. And I think if you press us early on and press our centre-backs, we could be in trouble. But like I said, there's a couple of players out. Richarlison's also missing for us due to bookings. So no Richarlison. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's out. Damari Gray's out. Abdoulaye Doucouré's out. Yerry Mina's out. And it looks like Solomon Rondon up front, which I think will only play into Brentford's hands. For Brentford, there's a lot that concerns me. The style of play, the high pressing I saw against Arsenal, I think that'll catch us out. Ivan Toney's ability to score, but also to move around, scares me a little bit. Rico Henry bouncing up the wings as a wing back, that's an incredibly dangerous threat that we need to be careful of. Onyeka, I think, could have a lot of fun in the middle, especially if we play someone like Tom Davis. I think he's got the pace and the physicality to bully Tom Davis and even give Alan a run for his money. So that'll be one thing that slightly worries me. So we'd have to be very careful on that. But yeah, I mean, they're the main ones for me. I think this is the first time we've played Brentford since 2011, played them in the League Cup, and right at the start of the revolution for Brentford, obviously not for us. I don't remember the match as much, but I know the score. I know that we lost on penalties, which, looking at QPR now, you know, nothing's really changed an awful lot. But no, I mean, it's just been amazing to watch Brentford. I will say this, the way the club looks round from the outside in, I am envious. Not just the stats, but the way you're careful with money, the way you can unearth gems, the way your manager suits the style that you want to play in. I think that's so important. I wish that was my one big wish for Everton, that we could like pick a style, pick a manager, pick a director of football who buys players in that style, picks a manager who plays that style, we build that team, and then if the manager does leave, you can get in another manager who plays a similar style, and not much, there's no big transitions. And I think because we failed to do that, and we've transitioned managers every 18 months, we're in the mess we're in. So I'm really envious about the way Brentford are ran. I think it's going to be a tough game this week, and I'm going to go with one all. I think we'll just sneak one on the break and catch Brentford out. But that is everything from me. I'm Connor Worms from the Toffee Blues, and I hope Brentford have a wonderful game. I hope the fans enjoy it, not too much, just because obviously I'm going to say that, but no, it should be a really good game, and it should be an interesting watch. I quite like the way that Brentford play, but yeah.
So there you have it. Matt, we know everything now about Everton. We know from their fans' point of view, and we know from the spreadsheet winkers' point of view. Has it changed anything in your mind about Sunday, or do you just go in there quite happily to go on kind of form and momentum and vibe? Because I see that as a big part of it too, you know.
I, to be honest, I think, like I've said, I think the main thing on Sunday is we somehow get back to basics, and the defence doesn't end up getting dragged all over the place like they did against Newcastle. I think we need to find a shape. I think we need to find a group of players, and I'm hoping we've been working on it this week, that we just, you know, find a way of defending that where we look solid again, and because that is so much missing from the Brentford we saw at the beginning of the season, the Brentford we got now. We got limited resources, I understand that, but that's the absolute key for me. And then, you know, I haven't spoken about Mbeumo and Tony, but I think they're a deadly partnership up front. So you've got that bit's kind of sorted. It's really sorting the back out that's important. And then you've got those sort of few little midfield quandaries to go through as well. Like I said, I might be thinking pushing Norgaard back into the back three, just to see if it can give us some stability. I'm not sure Thomas Frank will do that, though.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more confident about Sunday. I think, you know, as I just alluded to, I don't think they're on any kind of any regular form. There's no consistency going on there. We have to really scruff them up. We have to get amongst them and do all the things that we've been doing successfully when things have been going well for us. And I think make life as awkward as possible for them. And I think we'll do all of that and just hope, you know, people like Richarlison have off days. They have players amongst them who are very, very good. It's just we have to just be on top of it and just hope Lady Luck is smiling on us a little bit as well on Sunday. We also have to get in the pubs early and get those vocal cords lubricated, because as fans we have to play our part. I've struggled with some of the new songs, I have to admit. I can't get my head around my mouth won't actually form Brian and Mbeumo straight after saying Ivan Tony for whatever reason.
It's the syllable count, isn't it? It doesn't.
Oh, mate,
do you have to add a syllable or take away? Something?
I might have to do some. I might have to get some sort of vocal training for Sunday, because I'd really try for the whole of the game. Brian and Mbeumo, we got Ivan Toney and Brian. Oh, yeah, just honestly, I was like, it wasn't the beer. It was honestly, I just struggled. So I need to get into practice as well. I will have a drink. I'm not trying to drink this week, but I will have a drink on Sunday morning. Let's get on to some predictions, really, mate. I mean, that's all that's left from us. Go on, yeah, lad.
I'm going to 0-0. I think 0-0 would be. I know. But
boring bastard.
I honestly think 0-0 would be a really good result, because I just think we need to make a statement and strong defence. That's okay. I'll be well happy with a 0-0. Don't think that's going to happen. I think it will probably be 2-2.
Oh, wow. That's got me. So you're happy with a point. So, not happy with a point, but you can see a point.
Do you know what? I was going to say that to you, actually. Do you sort of feel that we're now sort of playing a bit of catch up? Because it feels like we took 1 point from what we thought might potentially be 7, you know, those three games against Norwich, Burnley, Newcastle. Do you think we're on catch up and it puts us under a bit more pressure? Or do you still feel comfortable?
Possibly, yeah. We are a little bit. We seem to be ahead of the, you know, the points per game average. Now we're almost back at 1-1. We're a point ahead of that. I guess the thing that I find reassuring is we're a point ahead of that, and we've got a lot of good players to come back. This isn't as good as it gets for us. This is as good as it is at the moment with an injury crisis. So I'm slightly buoyed by that. You know, yeah. there are teams below us that haven't got a point per game, and they're playing their 18. So I'm a little bit less stressy. Anyway, I'm not going to get stressy until much later.
And Everton have got a similar injury crisis, right?
Yeah.
So you know that it's almost two team patched up teams playing against each other, as I understand Everton.
Yeah, and I know they'll be coming to probably keep it tight as well. And so we have to, you know, I think we all know exactly how we're going to go for it on Sunday. But we need a big performance. We need two halves. We don't need one half by Brentford. We need 2 45 minutes where we're on it. So you're going 0-0 or 2-2. I'm going to say we're going to edge a win. I'm going to go 2-1 Brentford. I still can't see we've got a clean sheet in us. If we have got a clean sheet in us, we'll win this game. So I'll be drinking to that on Sunday, that we can keep the wolf from the door, or keep the toffees from the door, as it were. So thanks for joining me today, Matt. That was a very hastily arranged one.
Absolutely enjoyed
myself. I hope people have enjoyed listening to this as well. I've got an invite today for the FSA Awards on next Monday night. I'm going with Billy. We've nominated for jack shit this year because obviously we're not good enough anymore. So I'd rather go there and just enjoy it than pretend that we stand a chance of winning anything. So anyway, I've got that to look forward to. But as I said, I've got Arsenal to look forward to on Saturday. If you enjoy our podcast and you would like to buy us a beer, go to the website, besotted.com, and there's a little button there that says buy us a beer. And we like beer on Besotted, you know that. So yeah, we don't, it's not a begging bowl. If you don't want to do that, don't do that. But if you do enjoy what we do, and you think, yeah, I'll buy the lads a beer, then do that. That would be great. Thanks once again to the lads and lasses at Anything Is Possible. Thank you for your support. Funky little media agency down on the South Coast. Thank you for everyone that's partaken this week. Jonathan Birchall, Spreadsheet Winker, and you, Matt the Allard. Billy will be back behind the controls probably next week. Thanks for Billy for doing this most weeks. He bails me right out. To be honest, he's made it so complicated that I just leave it to him. When you look at his mixing blooming palette, it looks ridiculous. So I kind of just, you've done it. I can't do that. So, but I'll make a fist of it tonight. So any errors,
blame the toilet. Blame
Bill. Yeah, exactly. I've just been attacked by my cat during that as well. So that was, I held it together. All right. So yeah, cheers, Matt. Thanks for joining us. See you all at New Griffin Park on Sunday, bright and breezy. Hopefully we can get 3 points on the board before the tricky week. We've got then got Tottenham away and Leeds away. So it's important we get points while they're there. Nothing wasteful. Anything more to say, Mr. Allard?
No. I'll catch up with you Sunday. I look forward to it. Yeah.
And then we can plan the Portland's Park Peppa Pig World Adventure before Southampton away.
We want to make sure we buy our 2-for-1 advance tickets.
10 a.m. they open on Saturday. I've just looked it up on the old website. So there you go. Armed with a bit of knowledge there. All right, mate. See you soon. Come on, you bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.